Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Out of the Blank.
Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank Podcast. We have two special guests. I guess this is the quick hits, right? You guys are both technically the quick hits. Or is this Doug's show, the quick hits? And then we have the Lone Gunman podcast with Rob. But Rob, it's nice to see you. Doug, it's nice to see you for the first time. You're looking good.
Thanks, brother. How you doing?
Just living the dream. Happy to have you both on the show to be able to talk about some, I guess it would be a favorite topic of mine, at least of recently, mostly because I realize how complicated it is, and especially if you're new to the game and you're just heading into the assassination of JFK, you're kind of like, where do I go? And it's just probably easier to just, you know, dust your hands off with it and kind of walk away slowly, like approaching a bear. But I'm glad to have you guys on the show. Did you guys want to explain a little bit about what your show Quick Hits is about, or the Dallas Action Podcast?
Go ahead, Rob.
Well, Quick Hits is a JFK research news and notes podcast, basically, where, you know, we addressed a multiple amount of topics in a quick hit format, in a very long form show normally. We originally designed it, I guess, to be a little quicker, but, you know, when we get together and we start talking, it just, time just runs on, and we have such a good time doing the show together. You know, we started, what, 4 years ago now almost, and we're still having a blast doing it, and we're going to keep on doing it.
Yeah, we started out, Quick Hits was the original idea, I think, 8 years ago, but we couldn't figure out how to make it work. We were sort of tech newbies, and so we ended up starting two separate shows, two separate JFK assassination research podcasts. Mine's the Dallas Action, presented by Wall Street Window. Rob started the Lone Gunman. And once we got to the point where we had all the right shit to do it, we did it, you know. But we've been clipping right along, man, for so they're kind of like brother podcasts. Well, kind of. It's exactly what they are, the Lone Gunman and the Dallas Action. And we're contemporaneous, and we collaborate on research, throwing ideas around, and we're partners. That's it, you know. And we've got the two solo shows, and then we got Quick Hits, which is generally don't have guests most of the time. It's just me and Rob, and we do our thing. You know, what's current book releases, conference announcements, you know, things like that. Articles of note, and you know, also like we do on the other shows, deep dives into documents.
So, like twins separated at birth. Where would you guys focus mostly when it comes to the assassination? Like, when you guys get together, where do you guys find that, you know, you guys like to talk about the most, you guys rant about the most, and then where do you find you have areas you have a lot of questions on?
Well, you know, it's crazy, because we don't necessarily, like, Doug doesn't know what I'm going to talk about, and if I open his outline up, I'll know what he's talking about, but not in depth per se. And this weird synchronicity happens. If you ever listen to Quick Hits,
every time. Yeah.
It's just the topics always seem to mesh and meld in some form or fashion that we didn't even plan out. And it's crazy. It's almost like a, it's like a wavelength thing, you know? So I think it's really cool. You know, the way it comes together. Doug's a really meticulous note taker. He likes to plan things out and write things down ahead of time. And I don't do that at all. I go off the cuff. I don't plan anything. I don't write anything when, it, you know, it's just, all right, I'm going to throw it down and let's go. And it works.
We have diametrically opposite techniques, you know, ways of working with the podcast, but it he's absolutely right. It works. I never know what he's going to bring. I always send him this like Word document that says, I'm going to talk about this here and this here and this here. And I never know what Rob's going to have. When he came to Nashville, we recorded here an episode of Quick Hits, and he pulls out this manila file folder and he's got like an inch worth of paper he's printed off. And he just goes through it. I had no idea, which is cool because I get to react sort of in real time to what he's bringing and his questions and his analysis and the points he's bringing up. Quick Hits is usually pretty rapid fire with a lot of speculation, which we freely admit, don't we, Rob?
That's right.
That's right.
And mistakes.
And yes, because.
Well, that's the thing is you got to have a script to do your show, but at the same time you keep it free flow as well too. I mean, it's good to have a script, especially if you look at the amount of JFK information that there is out there. Like half the time I'm willing to talk to anybody who's made anything about it as long as I can like at least get my mindset there. Like if you say Lee Harvey Oswald did it or you say he didn't do it, you know, I can get to that realm of like maybe he was or maybe he wasn't. But then it gets into like thing like I've seen people write books with UFOs included into it. I'm like, I can't get there and I'm not going to entertain that, but I'm more than happy to just leave you alone and let me be, you know, like that situation. But I mean, it's hard to know. I mean, the case at this point, I mean, it's been almost 60 years and I'm a young generation kind of looking into it. And it's like there's you would think a lot of work would be done already on it. But then at the same time, there's just a lot of like, which direction do you believe he rode a bus or not? Do you believe that he was on the steps or not? Do you believe that he, and there's just so much stuff out there where it's like, I don't know what to believe. And then you look at the documents and the documents say the same thing. You got one document that says one thing and another document going another way. So I just go, what the hell was happening in Dealey Plaza? Cause it seemed like an Area 51 conglomeration of events that were going on.
Like yeah. A temporary Bermuda Triangle. Yeah. Yeah. Dimensions were crossing over, you know, so much going on in Dealey Plaza, and it's not really that big of a place. So I think we can, using logic and clear reasoning, you know, a lot of the shit that's been alleged that went on in Dealey Plaza probably didn't. It's not enough room, you know,
right? You have 20 assassins, simplify. And you know, 20,000 cameras, 20 assassins. 80 shots, you know, I mean,
you remember that headline from the Onion, that parody news site said JFK killed by FBI, CIA, NSA, KGB, KKK, president hit with, what was it? 279 bullets from 38 different directions. You know, there's a lot of that going around. Too much conspiracy buff fluff.
There was a lot of like, who did it was, I guess, the question that usually gets asked, which at this point is a dumb question because it's like, we don't know. We're probably not going to know. It might be in a document somewhere, or would they just maybe lost whoever could have been the person if you don't believe it was Oswald? But then why Dealey Plaza? Why was this just a specific location? I've heard that question get asked multiple times when people like, for me, I think it was the military industrial complex. People say then they could have just did it when in his sleep. And then it was, does that lead to, no, maybe it was Dealey Plaza because it was a public event and it was, you know, I don't know, a message. And then it's just like, I don't know. It's like there's a points on all sides, at least that's what I've noticed.
Yeah, well, when you're looking at Dealey Plaza, you know, everybody always says, well, you know, there's a bunch of tall buildings around there. It's an echo chamber. You're not really going to know immediately what direction the bullets are coming from. You know, it's going to sound like they're coming from everywhere. And if you have a shooter up on the grassy knoll behind the picket fence, there is a very good chance that you're going to get away. It's an area that kind of can be controlled. It's an area accessible by railroad tracks. You know, there a lot of cars are around. You know, if you can jump in somebody's trunk and get the hell out of there real quick. I mean, it's the possibilities are endless. Because I think whoever was shooting from up there, and I think there was a shooter up there, planned to get away very well. And you see different reports from different things. Like you have Lee Bauer sitting in that tower up behind the grassy knoll back in the railroad yard. And you hear what he sees. And Doug, what's that deaf mute guy who was watching? Ed Hoffman was watching from somewhere across the tracks. And he tells the story of what he saw going on behind the picket fence. And you have people that were up on the railroad overpass who stated what they saw. You have everybody rushing up there because that's where they thought that they heard shots coming from. And you have multiple witnesses stating that they were running into Secret Service agents up there, turning people back. So I think that the areas were analyzed and this area provided the best opportunity to get away. Not to mention the fact that you have a clear shot. You're not going to be seen. You can conceal yourself and get away. Boom.
You know, Dr. Walt Brown told me one time, if you think about the average size of an automobile trunk in 1963 and how many cars were parked back there, you know, he says he wishes that the police would have popped every trunk in that yard. Because they're huge, man. You can fit two people in some of those things. You know, very real possibility that's where a shooter hid, maybe, at least for a little bit. I don't know. But that's just pure speculation. See, Rob, I admitted it.
Look. Well, I think it's safe to speculate on some of those things. It just really depends on where you go. Like, I've seen the witness accounts that talked about seeing a person with a hat on the sixth floor of the building. And I've heard people say witness statements talking about the Secret Service member flashed a badge. And, you know, so you just go, okay, so which one do you choose to validate and which one do you choose to toss out? I mean, I was trusting Roger Craig's statements for a while just because he talked about being in the interrogation room and then Hostie saying that, no, he wasn't in the interrogation room. And I think if you look at kind of Hostie's background, I think he's probably the one that would be the one that would lie to you first. Maybe I'm wrong in saying that. It just seems like he fits that kind of description where it's like, I'm trying to look at each possible route you can take. It's kind of like one of those, like, you know, where you say like, yes or no, you can do this. And then it pulls you down a side and then you go down another one. You know what I'm talking about? One of those little books that tell you like, do you like Coke or Pepsi? Coke, you go up. And then it says like, what about Pepsi or Sprite? And then it goes over. It's like one of those picture books. It just keeps tossing around. So you end up back at the freaking start where you're like, okay, how do I actually finish the race without just looping around in circles 1,000 times?
Yeah.
Well, Rob, how many examples of people, the last episode of Quick Hits, you brought what, 5 examples of witnesses claiming to have run into and encountered Secret Service agents.
Yeah. And Roger Craig was one of them.
Yeah. What, Roger Craig was one.
Dallas police officers, 2 different ones. So, you know, it's not just an anomalous story. There's a pattern. And there was no Secret Service agents on the ground in Dealey Plaza immediately after the shots, period. End of discussion. They were in 3 places: Love Field, guarding the planes. They were in the motorcade. And they were at the Dallas Trademark waiting on JFK to get there. That's it. There were none on the ground in Dealey Plaza or along the motorcade route at all. So obviously somebody, multiple people were impersonating Secret Service agents around that area. They were at the rear of the depository and up on the grassy knoll, preventing people from coming back in that parking lot long enough for the gunman to either conceal himself or get away. You know, and when you're looking at Dealey Plaza, and it's very interesting to go back and look at all the photos that were taken that day. And Robin Unger has a really great site where he has pictures of all the photography that was taken in Dealey Plaza immediately after the assassination. And you can go through there and you can kind of see where people were at various points, right? And one of the most interesting things to me and Doug is the one person who has never been identified in Dealey Plaza, who was actually standing in the street beside JFK's limousine with his hand raised in a fist at the point where JFK's head's blown off. He's seen sitting down beside the umbrella man. He is seen with what appears to be a walkie-talkie under his shirt, you know, on his back under his shirt. And he sits down. He's there for a little bit after the assassination. And then he walks down Elm Street and disappears, never to be identified, never to come forward. And about of all the people that we know of that were in Dealey Plaza, we know 99% of them. This guy is a ghost.
The Warren Commission never even tried to identify him, and they call him Dark Complected Man. And Rob's exactly right. He's wearing a beret, a blue shirt. He appears to be kind of a tall Latino man wearing glasses. And he is the closest living witness to the headshot.
He was standing literally in the street. Off the curb, in the street.
Maybe 3 feet from the limousine at the time. And like Rob says, with his fist raised in the air. And they never even tried to find the guy. And you can look at some photo enhancements that are online that I think are good, that seem to show him, like Rob says, sitting down next to Umbrella Man. They chat. Now, you got to think about it a minute. You think about Dealey Plaza. You think about the aftermath of the shooting. People are hitting the deck. You know, the Newmans, is that their name? The family with the young kids? People are hitting the deck, screaming, running to the grassy knoll. That one cop dumps his motorcycle, just lays it over and runs with his gun drawn, right? I can't remember his name. These two guys sit on the curb and talk. And then there are photos of him talking in what looks like a radio, walking away toward the Triple Underpass, tucking this radio with an antenna behind his back. Of course, these are photo enhancements and photos that came out years later. You know, I'm of the opinion that was a guy named Felipe Vidal Santiago. I'm convinced 99.9% that's him. And for me, that's a good place to start it and go outward, like use him as the hub from Dealey Plaza, right? Because I'm convinced it's him now.
And we know he was in Dallas at the time.
Yes, yes. We that know helps. And there's no question. In April and last day of March, first day of April, 1963, President Kennedy basically shut down a lot of raids, and he put confinement to county orders on the most violent of the independent anti-Castro Cubans, basically confined them to whatever county they were supposed to live in. If you get caught on a raid, you're going to prison. And it was a big deal, and it pissed a lot of people off. And Santiago was one of these people that got shut down. And they're not supposed to leave the county. Well, we have a document where the FBI is informing INS that one of their informants says that Felipe Vidal Santiago went to Dallas during that time. Later, after the assassination, we questioned about it. Santiago said he went there to meet who, Rob?
General Edwin Walker.
General Edwin Walker, who is the man that Lee Oswald is alleged to have tried to assassinate in April of 1963. But we know he was in Dallas.
We corroborated by Jerry Patrick Hemming as well.
Oh, yeah. Corroborated by Roy Hargraves, mm-hmm. who is, and there we go, Rob. We're talking about coming, you know, radiating from the hub. And Roy Hargraves would be the next link in that chain. Anybody, go find, if you're interested in this subject, I want you to go find a book called Well, you can't read it. It's not in the book, is it?
I think it's in the second edition, or the, was it the first?
The interview?
Yeah.
The interview with Hargraves?
Yeah.
No, Twyman interviewed him for the book, but didn't publish it.
Right, but Hancock put it in his book.
In the first edition of Someone Would Have Talked. Yes. It's, but I don't think it's in the second edition.
No.
No. Contact Quick Hits JFK if you want a PDF of this. But Roy Hargraves, who was Felipe Vidal Santiago's right-hand guy, in these Cuban raids, in these anti-Castro operations. He gave an interview to Noel Twyman for the book Bloody Treason that is absolutely insane. He lays out how the operation happened. He corroborates that he and Vidal were in Dallas that day, and he admits that they flew back to Miami that afternoon on a private plane, but he wouldn't say who was on the plane with him because they were still alive at the time. And he said too much. And later on, he sued Twyman to keep it out of the book. But it'll give you the creeps, dude. Robbie, it'll give you the creeps. It'll make the hair on your arm stand up when you read how he describes, well, you know, you wouldn't know exactly who the target is. And yes, you know, you wouldn't even know what city you were in. You wouldn't know who the target is till he came around the corner, you know, in the limo. And he goes into all this descriptive stuff. And then, like I say, he admits Vidal and he were in Dallas. I'm told, and this is just hearsay, it's not evidence, by another researcher that he admitted a lot more in private later, but that can't be corroborated at all. Don't put any stock in that. That's there's no secret evidence of any tapes that nobody can share with anybody of any conversations or anything. So,
Wait, do you believe that this was more of a hit job, not some type of grand orchestrated plot? Like, I've heard many people bring up the assassination team in that day in Dallas. Some people think that it was like, I mean, which in my opinion, I kind of validate, at least I keep one foot in the pool on that aspect, just because, I mean, if you look at the organized crime area where the CIA is working with the mob, I mean, you have regime change plans already for Castro. It's not so hard to flip it, but I still, even then, I'm not 100% in, like I'm still an observer in this aspect, but when we come to an assassination team, I don't know about orchestrating, just getting a bunch of people, flying them from different parts to all meet in Dallas on that day. It's weird if they are involved in Dallas on that day, just being in the area. But I start going, you could easily just pick somebody off the street, like why the lone gunman aspect is kind of still viable, because you have this person that allegedly was handing out Cuba papers and kind of showing these communist notes, even though he claimed that he was a Marxist. But you just have all these weird back and forths where it's like, what do you validate the most? If there is an assassination plot against the president, I mean, who would be this person that would orchestrate this plot? How do we get from the events of this person and the ones that are going surrounding out?
Well, remember what I told you, Robbie, on the last show, when it comes to the actual shooters, all right, you're either going to be a paid assassin, paid handsomely, or you're going to do it out of ideology. Like, you diametrically oppose this motherfucker so much that you have no qualms whatsoever about taking him out. And you do it for free, if you know, hell. Or you're going to be paid handsomely. You turn up here at this time and you pull the trigger. All right. But at that point, you know, if you're talking about a paid assassin, not knowing what he's walking into, and see the president come around the corner, I don't care who you are, you might have second thoughts when it's something that serious or what's going on. And what makes sense to me is this was done by folks.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Who were diametrically opposed to Kennedy and his policies against Cuba. And it lays right in line with their ideology to take this guy out because either they had been hurt in the past, either personally or professionally, by Kennedy's policies. And then it gets down to a point. I mean, we're talking about mercenaries, guys with families and kids who believed in their ideology so much that they would be willing to go hop on a boat with guns and go to another country to try to kill their leader. I mean, that's crazy. That's like saying, Hey, Robbie, meet me in Ocean City. We're going to hop on the boat and we're going to go down here, grab a couple of your friends. We're going to go take out Castro.
We could do it. Easy.
Yeah, but that's fucking crazy. You know, are you going to walk away from your life to go do that? No, not unless you believed so much in your heart that it was the right thing to do and you were the guy to do it.
I don't know. I got time. I got nothing going on this Tuesday.
Well, the assassins, the hit team. You were asking about the...
Doug, you got to move your camera over. You're going off screen when you do that. There you go.
Well, maybe I want to.
I want to see your face.
Rob gets all, Rob gets all, his face turns red when he sees me too much. So I was trying to, I don't know what the deal is there.
It's lack of oxygen. It's lack of oxygen to the brain.
Okay. The big military industrial complex grand conspiracy. What do we call that, Rob? The consensus view of CIA primacy.
Yes.
Robbie, I did a thing. Do you know who Allendale is?
Allendale? Yeah, he wrote a book. He's a prominent researcher, isn't he?
Yes, and he's a dear friend of mine. I had him on the show, and I read a list of 58 names, right? I just started reading names. Like, think about it. Do you think this person was involved in the conspiracy? And, you know, it was Alan Dulles and Ed Lansdale and LeMay and Lucian. What's that guy's name? Lucian Conine, Howard Hunt, Bernard Barker, and Lyndon Johnson. Anyway, it's just all these people, you know. And I stopped and I said, even John Foster Dulles and that bastard had been dead since 1958. Now, I guarantee you there were people in the audience that nodded to every name. Hell yeah, he was involved. Hell yeah, he was involved. Hell yeah, he knew. Hell yeah, he was involved. That guy too. No. The people that did it, the people in Dealey Plaza that day, they were highly specialized, bad motherfuckers, paramilitary guys, real life operators. And they came from, I'm convinced, anti-Castro operations, clandestine operations, covert ops against Cuban Castro. That whole South Florida CIA-seated, you know, group of badass paramilitary operators. And they had worked together before. It's just logic. I think the mistake we make and the mistake people still make is that people, they get the murder plot and the plot to cover up the truth intertwined. I don't necessarily think the people that covered it up are the people that did it. I think the people that did it used Lee Oswald as the patsy and set him up as the patsy, because they knew damn well if they left him holding the bag, they were dropping it in the lap of CIA and FBI. essentially backing them into a corner and forcing a cover-up. The people that covered it up to save their own asses because the bag was dropped in their lap. The military-industrial complex covered it up because the guys that did it, and there were some guys, you had to have some CIA officer somewhere. You had to have people in CIA helping. There's no doubt. Rogue elements in the CIA, that's a big cliche. Yeah, no doubt. A 100%. You have to have people that have certain knowledge. The wiretap operation in Mexico City, right? You know, I'm sure you've heard all about Oswald's or the Mexico City incident. You know, what went on there with, we don't have any pictures of him, but Oswald was there. There's a big thing about whether or not he was impersonated, whether or not it was him. Only about a dozen people in the world knew about that operation outside of the people actually running it. You have to have that specialized knowledge to know to send the Oswald identity through there to dirty him up before the assassination. Rogue elements in the CIA, yeah. Was it 50, 60, 70 fucking guys? No. Give me a break. Give me a break. Come on. No. Small number. Specialized knowledge. You know what I mean?
You got to remember, the CIA has got to have plausible deniability. So they're not going to use their own guys. They've always used other people who, if they're killed or captured, they can say, well, I don't know who the hell they are. They don't work for us. But in reality, maybe they have in the past, but they're not technically CIA agents or assets.
Exactly.
They're operators used by the CIA. And because they're worth getting.
What they called them nuisance raids. All of these anti-Castro organizations had their own thing going on. Yeah, they were getting money and supplies and funds from the CIA, but there were also some that were undesirable that the CIA didn't trust. And there were a hell of a lot of them that did not trust the CIA. And Felipe Vidal Santiago was one of them. And it was these groups that the Kennedy brothers shut down with their confinement to counties in March, April of 63, you know, as if they didn't have enough reason to resent Kennedy, you know, now he's going to throw him in prison.
Yeah,
if they
get
caught outside with Broward County, Florida, or, you know, different counties in Florida, but they got caught outside the county, they were going to go to prison because these private raids were such a problem. And they were a problem for CIA as well. CIA, if they found that Lauren Hall, that's a good example where Lauren Hall and some anti-Castro Cubans in October of 63, they had a gunboat. They had a boat, you know, boat full of guns. They're on the way to pull this raid, and CIA rats them out to Cesar Diaz at INS in Miami, you know, and they all get busted. So they didn't trust the CIA. There's a whole other wing of these guys that were not necessarily under CIA's umbrella, and it was because they were a little too much. You know?
Well, I would probably believe more that it was the CIA. That's kind of where I stand when I say the military industrial complex is that it's an individual kind of rogue elements of the CIA. I've talked to a lot of people who've studied kind of intelligence operations, written plenty of books on them, like Nigel West and plenty of other people that have just a long history about espionage and all these. They say it's a myth, like the CIA is never supposed to activate on domestic land. Well, it's a myth that's written down and it's kind of like their whole thing. So maybe they might side more with the lone kind of scenario, the lone gunman scenario, I guess, of Oswald being the person who did it, which makes it hard because I'm trying to listen to everybody and validate every single perspective here. But where I stand is if you look at Kennedy's policies, I mean, I had to understand a lot before even going into the assassination and really being able to talk about it or being able to look at it. And this is just recently. I mean, I messed up the first couple episodes I did by having experts on and not knowing. I just thought it was an interesting topic. Then realizing how complicated it is, I looked into Kennedy's policies. I looked into the fear of communism, how big of a fear that was. I mean, Alan Dulles, for instance, he looks like a bad guy. He reads like a bad guy. I mean, definitely probably wasn't the nicest person. But if you look at why I guess maybe he's doing a lot of these things is because of this patriotic duty he feels like he's doing. I have to do the tough things that other people won't be able to do to protect my country. And that is the fear of communism right there. So if we go into Kennedy's policies, for instance, Kennedy ran against Nixon. He won. Nixon lost. If you look at the way that the direction of the government was going, Eisenhower's administration, all the ones before that, this idea of plausible deniability was because they were so used to getting the yes all the time, they didn't feel like the president needed to know about a lot of this stuff. Look at Alan Dulles involved in Cuba. I mean, do you think Kennedy knew everything that was going on in Cuba? No, the act of plausible deniability. But Kennedy changed in his administration. He became this, he was on this platform of being a cold warrior. And then he experienced real change and he started changing a lot of his decisions, not siding with the way that the government elections have always been going, which I think they were ready for Nixon to take over. I think they were expecting Nixon to win. And then when Kennedy won, they thought maybe we can still have this guy play from our court. And then they realized, no, Kennedy's not going in the direction we want him to go. He's going in a different direction. And I think that's when we get this peace-loving person that a lot of people remember today, the ones who's making all these speech about peace. I mean, the most famous speech about, I'd rather my kids be red than dead. I mean, that's, everyone's like, wait, so you're okay with communism? I'd rather have death. And then you kind of examine this aspect of the way that the government's been going for a lot of things. And you get to this point of, I think there's a thing called a blue sky memo. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that, but it's more common in when 9/11 happened. It was from Clinton's administration. You get to see this aspect of all the things that are usually supposed to be written down were just being said. And that's when you get to the individual actors. I doubt everybody in the CIA knew what was going on. I doubt anybody in Dallas really knew what was going on. I think maybe some found out about it later and did their best to cover it up. But I think when we talk about the individual actors in the CIA who might have orchestrated a plot, they had to get their message from somewhere, whether that was Alan Dulles or another head like J. Edgar Hoover, I don't know. But I don't think everybody in the CIA knew what was going on.
I think the cover-up absolutely went that high. Right. The cover up absolutely went to Alan Dulles and to Hoover. You know, Dulles was on the Warren Commission. But I don't think the murder plot, the plot to kill Kennedy, did.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Mm-mm. I just don't believe so. It didn't go up that high. Cover up, yes. You got to think about this. I mean, look at David Atlee Phillips, who was the station chief in Miami at the time. Is that right, Rob? Or not Miami, but Mexico City? Yeah, he was the station chief in Mexico City at the time. You got to think, if you're going to run an operation to dirty up a guy, to frame him for the murder of the president of the United States by sending the Oswald identity through those wiretaps in Mexico City. If you're David Atlee Phillips, are you going to run that operation through your house and track mud through your house? No. Are they really going to run an Angleton asset, or Angleton and Phillips going to dirty this guy up by running this guy through both of their shops, frame an Angleton asset for the crime by dirtying him up with Mexico City? I don't think so. I think they would run him through somebody else's shop. That's just, to me, it's common sense.
But why would they leave so much of a dirt trail on Dulles if Dulles didn't have any involvement really into it? Maybe he was involved in the cover up. But I mean, if you are reading from like the angle of the Warren Commission, the issues, so many issues with the Warren Commission that we could point out, or just the amount of people that didn't feel like they agreed with the Warren Commission's official statements and the amount of
what do you mean by dirt trail to Dulles?
I feel like Dulles's fingerprints all over this type of thing. So I
how
say,
so?
I would say mostly just there's some interviews with him where he just obviously they ask him a question like, hey, do you feel like you haven't done anything bad in your life? And he goes, no, when he's smoking a pipe, just obviously he's doesn't care to answer the question. And then you look at the Warren Commission. I mean, he did the most interviews, I think, with a lot of the witnesses compared to the other members of the
Warren Commission. That's because he was ostensibly the head of the cover-up.
Okay.
100%. It should have been the Dulles Commission.
He was there so certain things didn't come out.
He knew where the bodies were buried.
Yeah.
He knew where the bodies were buried.
But don't you think he would have written a journal down or wrote some type of note or something just to make sure that his name doesn't get blackballed in history that way?
It's not.
Because how many people agree that it was Dulles being the one that orchestrated the plot? And if you're saying it was because of he did a lot of stuff with the cover-up, but it still leads back to his name. So even if that's a mistake and he was just a part of the cover-up, you still have this, like I said, I would say this dirt trail that if it is linked to the cover-up and he isn't the one that orchestrated the plot, but then people would just jump on the gun saying he orchestrated the plot. I feel like he would write something down to at least cover his ass in history.
What day, you remember the date that Dulles left office, Rob? I can't remember.
No, I think it was the 61.
Yeah.
61 or early 62.
Yeah, I think it was in later in 61. I can't remember offhand. Again, I believe the plot to murder Kennedy was much smaller than we have been led to believe by those that insist on the Alan Dulles United Fruit. It's a fruit company. Look it up. World Bank, United Fruit, Alan Dulles, Doug, don't you get it? Man, please. The cover up had to be, the cover up had to be huge, and it had to include Johnson, and it had to include Dulles, and it had to include Hoover. All of the subterfuge after Lee Harvey Oswald got popped in that basement, only these guys could make that go away, could orchestrate the cover-up.
It's low-hanging fruit.
It's low-hanging fruit. But the murder plot does not have to go up any further, and I don't believe it did then. Lower middle management in the CIA, and then it's one or two guys. Maybe Bill Harvey. He's certainly high on my suspect list to be that guy because
Morales,
because they are the two guys in a position to know all of the very specialized information you need to know to orchestrate the murder plot and the frame-up.
I pulled up a document on here before, and I've gotten the name wrong a couple of times. I thought it was Roselli, but it was Morales. And it says in parentheses by his name when they're listing off a couple of people, and it says Morales, and it says weak link on it.
Well, he knew all the right guys.
Yeah.
You know, he knew he would certainly know what violently anti-Kennedy, anti-Castro paramilitary operators who were badass enough to do it and who were also outside that CIA protective umbrella of anti-Castro operators to recruit. He knew all these guys. He knew Morales and Harvey were one of the 10 or 12 people in the world who knew about the Mexico City wiretaps.
Who were running assassination teams.
They were running assassination teams.
Here's the deal. So it's a common mistake. It's a common myth, and it's lasted until this day. But it's a common mistake that a lot of the early researchers made back in the 60s, including Garrison, trying to link Shaw to the CIA and all this other stuff, because the CIA was so secretive about what they did. That it was easy to say, oh man, well, the CIA must be behind it. You know, we don't know what they're doing, you know, and turn it into some kind of a domestic plot. And over time it's been, you know, well, let's blame the CIA. Let's blame the CIA. Let's blame the CIA. Even up until now, people still spout it, but there's no proof whatsoever in documentation form that anybody in the higher ups of the CIA can be linked back to the assassination plot, period, end of discussion. You just can't do it.
Would you just say that they're just doing their job? I mean, the CIA, their blueprints, I mean, even when someone died overseas involved in an operation, that could be a regime change style thing. If they were captured, if they were killed, we didn't make a memorial for them. We don't even know that they died. A lot of times you don't know half of these people. You don't even know people are in the CIA until like a document comes out.
Right. You know, like I said, it wasn't until the 70s where people started to question just what in the hell the CIA was up to. You know, when you have the church committee, you know, and the HSCA investigation. And because, like I said, when I talked to you before, I talked about oversight and autonomy, you know, that the CIA has and was lacking as far as oversight and the autonomy they had to act on their own without having to tell anybody what they're doing. And it was that secret monster of the 60s and 70s where, you know, if you're a JFK researcher back then, it's easy to say, oh, well, CIA must have done it. You know, we don't know what they're up to. They must have been behind it. They're, you know, they're just like this evil, you know, this big evil corporation that's veiled in secrecy. And, you know, people think that, you know, the CIA, thanks to Hollywood, is full of, you know, Tom Cruise super spies. And Jason Statham's running around the world kicking ass and taking people out when in reality, that's just not the case. I mean, there's people that have worked with the CIA that have come forward and told what they do, you know, and it's not, you know, some glamorized Hollywood version of Ethan Hunt or E. Howard Hunt or anything like that. You know, it's a matter of blending in, getting information. It's more of an information gathering thing and what you can do with it. And also how you can procure assets and information that behooves either what you're doing or for the betterment of your country. You know, if another country, you know, we've all talked about, you know, the Vietnam, the Golden Triangle, Afghanistan, the poppy fields, heroin trade, gold, you name it. If a country is rich in something, oil, rare elements, rare earth elements, chances are we've weaseled our way into something, you know, either a behind the back trade or just an outright, well, if you're not going to give us that, we'll take it kind of deal. Or we're going to put somebody in power that's going to work with us and we'll take out the guy that's not. And I can see the CIA doing that kind of thing, but as far as running something and actually killing the president of the United States, I just don't see it.
That's fair. And like I said, I'm open to learning more about it and hearing everyone's perspective on this. Because, I mean, I just look at it because when I base anything the actions of the government that they do, I mean, CIA involvement in MKUltra, Alec Dulles involvement in MKUltra that ended up coming out later, things that get labeled as a conspiracy that ended up getting proven to be true. I mean, MKUltra was labeled a conspiracy for the longest time, and those survivors, a lot of them did speak out and were shunned. And now there's, you look up court cases about it now, 2018 and 2020, them suing Canada. It's happening, articles in Canada. It's Montreal News, I think it is. But they're suing the government for things that happened in MKUltra that ended up coming out later. I mean, Joyon West.
Yeah, but MKUltra was more about control.
You what know, I'm saying is that
it's
the
not
action,
about building so. A Manchurian candidate that will go assassinate on your your whim.
That's more what the idea of MKUltra was about until it ended up changing later. I mean, it was never successful. But what I'm saying is those horrible acts of drugging people with LSD and doing those types of actions, whether you believe that you're doing it for a patriotic reason or research reason or not, is a reason why I'm suspicious of just the government aspect of things.
Well, that's just the shit they did back then. I mean, they did all kinds of foul stuff to people. You know, the Tuskegee experiment. I mean, we can sit here all day, you know, and talk about the weird, horrible things that the CIA was involved with in experimentation. And even the Nazis were, the Russians were, everybody was. You know, everybody was looking for that way to
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
To gain an inch on their opposition, and they would go about doing it whatever way possible, whether it be, you know, through sending spies in to getting information from people. You know, you see the space race, the satellite race. All of that wraps all in into it.
That's what I would suggest when it comes to just an aspect of it had to be higher up than just a couple of low-level agents.
I wouldn't necessarily call Bill Harvey or David Morales low-level agents. Harvey was the CIA's chief guy on the Cuban task force, you know, the Cuban special group. He was the CIA's guy. He was head of ZR rifle.
He was the guy they based 007 off of. Bill Harvey was a bad motherfucker.
Bill Harvey was a bad, and he was in those National Security Council type meetings with the Cuban plans with Lansdale. Matter of fact, Bill Harvey hated Ed Lansdale with a passion. You know, and that's the thing about Harvey.
But he fell out of favor with people like Dulles and Helms and Angleton and all these guys. Rome was a punishment.
It was a punishment. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, he disobeyed orders from Robert Kennedy himself, and he sent two commando teams into Cuba during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Robert Kennedy said, stop any and all raids. Stop. We're not doing anything. Harvey sends AM Cobra. That was one of them. AM Cobra. I can't remember the name of the other team, Rob. But AM Cobra was one of them. And it got him fired. It got him taken off that project. And Robert Kennedy had him banished to the CIA basement for a few months. And then he was shipped off to Rome for that. But yeah, he was a badass. But he's coming back. But in April of 63, the same week that Oswald is allegedly trying to pop Walker, Harvey is in Miami, literally the same week, meeting with who? Who's he meeting with? According to Lauren Hall, who Robbie is connected to, Philippe Vidal Santiago and Roy Hargraves, who we were talking about earlier.
And General Walker.
And General Walker. Yes, and General Walker, Lauren Hall, they're like this, you know. But according to Lauren Hall, he tells the HSCA that the same week that Harvey is in Miami meeting with John Roselli, and we know this from Harvey's notes, the ZR rifle handwritten notes, he's meeting with Roselli in Miami. At the same time, Lauren Hall is in a hotel room meeting with John Roselli, Santo Trafficante, about hitting Castro, wink, wink. You know, these guys, and not only that, but Eddie Bio, who later he disappears on Operation Tilt, the Bio Poly raid, never to be seen from again. I think that was in June, May or June. Another one of these independent anti-Castro guys. So Bill Harvey, like, where did I go there, Rob? Holy shit, I lost my train of thought. I did a quick hits. I went completely around in a circle.
You mentioned the Walker incident, and you don't think Oswald took the shots? Are you kidding me? What? I'm kidding.
Well, I heard you, Robbie, talking. I was just actually listening to the Larry Hancock episode last night while I was mowing the yard. And I heard you mention something about, you know, General Walker had later said that, you know, it was Oswald that had fired at him and this and that. Actually, he sent a letter, was it to the church committee, Doug? Where he stated that the Dallas police told him very shortly after his, quote, assassination attempt, that they had picked up Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby for the crime and was contacted. The Dallas police were contacted by Robert Kennedy personally and told to cut them loose.
Yep.
By 12.
Yeah. He wrote an op-ed piece one time that stated pretty much that that both Kennedy, it was right after Robert Kennedy was killed. He wrote this op-ed piece. Can't remember what newspaper it was published in, but he stated, you know, had Robert Kennedy not saw fit to kick Lee Oswald and Jack Ruby loose, you know, the night they tried to kill me, then both Kennedys would be alive to this day. It always gave me the creeps a little bit.
When I had Posner on the show, I mentioned that the witnesses said that they saw two people, the witnesses to the Walker shooting, people that were in the area. And Posner told me there were no witnesses that saw anything. That, so, I mean, I don't know. I said that Lee wasn't the person that took a shot at Walker. It just didn't make sense. I mean, you have this guy who's like a right-wing extremist, then you have him shooting a liberal like Kennedy. And then, I mean, you miss a sitting target rather than you're able to make one that's moving 75 yards away and farther. It just didn't really make sense. And then he went by Marina's statements. And I just feel like you have to toss Marina's whole thing out, because I even pulled up on air and showed him the document from the HSCA Volume 2 about the interview with Marina Oswald, where she couldn't even identify Lee's rifle. But the Warren Commission states that she was able to identify his rifle. Well, she didn't know the difference between a rifle and a shotgun. And the relationship was so dysfunctional that she didn't even care what he was doing when he was sitting on the back porch. She never took account to reloading or hearing all this practice maneuvers that allegedly people say about Oswald. So I just go, I don't think he was involved in that shooting. But if you're, I guess the way you kind of said earlier, if you're talking about Harvey, maybe somehow, I mean, if you look at the unreleased documents, for instance, could that, some of those unreleased documents be the threat to national security, be an aspect that the CIA had these individual rogue elements that were doing things without the full acknowledgement and documents? I mean, Harvey, his
they're not going to be in the documents.
Okay. Well, I'm about to say that right, Harvey,
there are some interesting clues to some shit that shouldn't have been going on in the documents. A good friend of mine, a guy named David Boylan. What's up, Dave? I call him the Dallas action. I call Dave the East Coast Bureau Chief. He lives over on the East Coast, but he's constantly sending me cool finds in the documents. Man, he found these that we call them the Black Nine documents. And what's interesting about that, there's a cryptonym called AM World. And this, again, this is something that should not have been going on. And it's interesting as hell. It's called, there was an operation okayed by Robert Kennedy, approved by Robert Kennedy. It was a Robert Kennedy spearheaded anti-Castro operation called AM World, AM World. And they started the recruitment process in October, right? Up until Dave found these documents a few years ago, according to Larry Hancock, because we, you know, they're good buddies, they're research partners too, Larry and Dave. Everything we knew about AmWorld is they started recruiting people in September and October of 63, but didn't officially go operational until April of 1964. That's when they pulled their first operation. Well, David found these AmWorld documents. Interesting as hell. Now, do you know what, Robbie, do you know the dictionary definition of the word exfiltration? Mm-mm. It is the removal of personnel. If you look on the Defense Department, State Department website, it's the removal of personnel from a hostile area, from enemy territory, after the execution of an operation. All right. These documents that we study, they're written, the words they use in documents are not accidents, right? So they're not, they're written in a very, very, what's the word I'm looking, looking for
specific
Rob.
Language.
Yes, specific language. So you look at these Black Nine documents, right? And they start out being dated the end of November, right? November 30th. And they spill into December. And they are AmWorld documents. And the title of the documents are Black Exfiltration. Now, what do you think of when you think of a black exfiltration, Rob?
Covert, black operations, black ops.
They're sneaking out of enemy territory after an operation is completed, right?
Yep, you're getting your guys the hell out of there.
Right, because they're done. You're sneaking them out.
Yep.
This is a CI document with the slug AmWorld, right, into November. They're not operational until April, titled The Black Nine. We didn't make, that's not some clever shit me and Dave came up with because they're talking about nine operatives. It's literally called The Black Nine. All right. 10 days, not even a week, 1 week after Kennedy's assassination. Here's what they're doing. They've got these guys that they call the Black Nine, right? 1 week after Kennedy's assassination, an operation that shouldn't be operational is sneaking. They're pulling a black exfiltration. They've got these guys hidden in crates marked spare parts in the hull of a cargo ship. And it goes down the list. Each one of them has a silenced pistol. Each one of them has a machine gun. Each one of them has a Collins radio. There's food. There's clothing. You know, it says black exfiltration. Why are they sneaking these guys out, this paramilitary team, in the hull of a ship? Calling it a black exfiltration 7 days after Kennedy's hit. David and I went looking for this boat, the MV Joanne. We can only find one MV Joanne that matches. It's even comes close to a match, right? We do all the research, man. We spent a week or so, you know, on and off, an hour at a time. Both of us are digging. We can only find one ship called the MV Joanne. And it burned and sank off the coast of Grand Cayman Island about a week before the Bay of Pigs invasion. But suddenly, here's this boat, but they're sneaking these guys out. Why are they sneaking guys out a week after the assassination? A black exfiltration from the continental U.S. That means they're sneaking the team out after an operation. Exfiltration, hostile territory. Doesn't make any sense. They shouldn't even hit the ground running until April. Very intriguing. You can find really cool shit in the documents to follow. And David is working on, David Boylan, and he's all over the education forum too. He's working on identifying which of these paramilitary operatives that ended up in the AmWorld thing later, operational, could have been the guys that were in the hull of the ship that was, you know, that were sneaking out right after Kennedy's hit. It's very intriguing, very interesting stuff. They shouldn't have been there. That document, if whatever they're doing is on the up and up, should not read the way it reads.
Did you look at any anomalies or people that were in Dallas on the day that just didn't seem like they should be anywhere even close to there? And then did you trace? Because like, that's my biggest example with Oswald. I mean, allegedly, apparently, from what I've been told by some low nut people, is that Oswald got stuck in traffic, and that's why he decided to get off the bus and do all this type of stuff. I have never really heard that before. I don't see any documents talking about traffic, but maybe they came across something that I haven't. But I mean, he went to a theater. He wasn't fleeing. He wasn't moving states or going somewhere over. And then I use what Rob's example is. If you have two kids, I mean, if you have a family, whether it's functional or not, I mean, you wouldn't take a shot like that either, no matter what your conflicting views are, or at least enough to where they wouldn't be in danger of anything. And the same example I use for Johnson. Johnson was part of the cover up. I'm 100% in. I don't know if he orchestrated the plot, because why would you sit your car right behind Kennedy's car in the motorcade, even if there is that James Tague bullet shot that ends up straying off from afar? So I just go, you got to look at who was involved that shouldn't have been there. And then you also look at what happens in the next month following. Did anybody leave? Did anybody go to another country? Did anybody do anything, obviously, that was getting out of that area in a certain amount of time period where it looked like they would be fleeing in a sense?
Oh, Rob, tell him about the Secret Service guys. That last you read that one art, the one document about the guys that flashed badges. They were hightailing it out of town.
Yeah, there was a document where there was a witness to a car being pulled over. I think it was somewhere outside of Fort Worth or Houston. And it contained, I think, three or four people in the car. And they were pulled over for whatever reason. I'm not sure if it was speeding or if the car was illegal in some way. But whoever was in it flashed Secret Service credentials and they were let go. And that totally shouldn't have happened. Because I doubt that it was legit. There shouldn't have been any Secret Service people, you know, hightailing it away from Dallas at that time after the assassination. But yeah, one thing I wanted to get to too, like, you know, when we're talking about these operators and if we knew if anybody who was in Dallas who shouldn't have been, there was a lot of them. you know, Felipe Vidal Santiago, Lauren Hall,
Hargraves,
Lawrence Howard. Hargraves, maybe Hemming, who the hell knows, maybe not.
Man, I go back and forth on him, Rob.
I know, maybe Sturgis. And then Doug, tell him about like a year ago the new information that we got from Lauren Hall's stepkid.
Yeah, Mr. John. Check this out. Lauren Hall, his last name escapes me right now. I haven't talked to him in several months, but his name's John
Pappas.
Pappas, John Pappas. Yeah, I guess we should explain who Lauren Hall is.
Yeah,
for those that don't know, he was another one of these guys that was connected with Santiago and General Walker. He was arrested by Castro after the revolution for running guns in Cuba to anti-Castro people, and he spent about 8 months as a cellmate to Santo Trafficante. Okay. They were cellmates in this Cuban prison. And now he ran with Jerry Hemming as well. And he's also up on that list, Robbie, for us, as far as Dealey Plaza suspects go.
I'm with you. Hall, I'm with you. I'm keeping up. Right.
Cool. Well, Jerry Hemming owned this really cool, fancy rifle, a Johnson 30-06 rifle, semi-automatic sniper rifle with a really badass scope on it. I believe I've read that even in 1963 dollars, this rifle was worth over $1,000. And these guys were in Los Angeles late January of 1963. And to have some more cash to get back to Miami, Hemming pawned the rifle to a private eye, right? A guy named Richard Hathcock, who had a partner, a guy named Roy Payne. And they were private investigators, the International Allied Detective Agency in Los Angeles. They pawned it, got some cash, and hightailed it back to Miami. Well, behind Hemming's back, in late October of 1963, Lauren Hall goes to Los Angeles and gets this rifle out of pawn that doesn't belong to him, right? Then he heads back to Miami via Dallas, Texas. He stops in Dallas, gets arrested for drug possession, and along with a trailer full of other guns that he's taken back. And from that point, the rifle disappeared. Well, on November 23rd, 1963, the FBI, an agent named Jerome Crow, he was in Los Angeles knocking on the door of the International Allied Detective Agency, and he wanted to talk to a guy named Roy Payne, who was Richard Hathcock's PI partner. And he says, "Oh, I'm Roy Payne. What can I help you with?" And the FBI agent had three questions for him. He had the question one: "Were you in Dallas yesterday, Mr. Payne?" "Well, no." "Two: Why are your fingerprints on a certain Johnson 30-06 rifle?" "And three: When's the last time you spoke with a guy named Lauren Hall?" Now, that rifle's never turned up again. At the end of the report, the agent says, well, it's not a Mannlicher Carcano like they found yesterday, so we're just going to drop it. No further action needed, right? But if they're 23 hours later, if they're chasing Hall and this rifle down, right, they're in Los Angeles at 10:30 in the morning knocking on the door, and they want to know, were you in Dallas, and why are your fingerprints on this weapon? His fingerprints are on the weapon because he handled it when it was in the office for 8 months, right? But doesn't that seem like to you, doesn't that tell us that the FBI had the damn weapon and it tied it to Dallas? Wouldn't you think?
I mean,
why else would they know his fingerprints are on it?
It confirms the document that I've read from the guy who called, I guess it was a news station or Life magazine or something, about Johnson's Guns, LLC. And he talks about the Mannlicher Carcano. He's like, there's no way that this gun could fire with the reloading time. And he even timed it up with,
the Johnson could. Well, fast forward. Uh-oh, did I lose you?
No, you're good.
Are you there? Okay. Well, fast forward to John Pappas. John Pappas is Lauren Hall's stepson, right? And late last year, John Pappas, with the help of his brother and a journalist friend of theirs, came forward, and he was the stepson of Lauren Hall again. And he has a Mannlicher Carcano that is manufactured at the same armory in Italy as the Texas School Book Depository weapon. And a few years after the assassination, he gave John that rifle. He said, hide this thing. Put it away, put it up, get rid of it. So he did. And he says, what's the big deal about this rifle? John was 19 at the time. And Lauren Hall said, one of these days you'll know. One of these days you'll know. So now nobody's examined the rifle yet. We're trying to work on something to maybe get out there. And I've got some pictures. For Mr. John, yeah, we got some really good pictures of this rifle, and it is exactly what he says it is. It is a Mannlicher Carcano of the same vintage, manufactured in the same armory as the one that they alleged that Oswald used.
So what do you think, Robbie?
What does it mean? We don't know.
If you're going to frame a guy with a Mannlicher Carcano, okay, shooting from the school book depository, it might be a good idea to, if you're going to have a shooter on the grassy knoll, use the same kind of rifle with the same kind of ammunition, so that if and when Kennedy's body is examined and they can pull fragments of the bullets out of his body, guess what? They're all matching Mannlicher Carcano ammunition. All of the spectrology or whatever the hell they call it, when they examine the metals, you know, the bullets are made up of, because only certain people were making these Mannlicher Carcano bullets back then. And, you know, if any of the fragments were solid enough to where you could identify it as a Mannlicher Carcano bullet, well, then there's no other question. I mean, sure, if you pull out a 30-06 bullet, per se, out of Kennedy, well, there goes your lone assassin theory right there.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Because it doesn't match the Mannlicher Carcano.
Yep, it's basically like seeding a rain cloud. You're going to introduce evidence into the crime scene. you know, you've got a cat on top of the Dowtex building with a bipod. This Johnson had a bipod and a hell of a badass scope on it. You got a guy up there. That's the money shot, you know. This guy gets lucky, hits somebody, you know, spray some Mannlicher Carcano lid around, you know, there you go.
Just to fill my 100%. Knowledge here real quick, I got to ask a couple of questions. But when it comes to Oswald, you agree that they were surveilling his mail for up to 4 years and then they dropped it the week of the assassination?
Oh, yeah. Oswald was in some way, shape, form, or fashion an asset of someone.
So the person that blames him as the patsy or the person or why they cover, when did the cover up start? When did they initially be like, we have to blame this on Oswald? Because your guys' points right now are validating the whole idea of we have to make sure that the public is satisfied and that there's no idea of conspiracy. But when I say that, though, I got to know if it's an individual assets in the CIA or individual rogue actors like Harvey or someone who has the connections to the intelligence file or the operational file on Oswald to pick him as the patsy, or was that part of the cover up? That when did that cover up start then?
I think the cover up started the second Oswald got popped. I think because that weekend, it was all he was, you know, all the speculation in the public and whatnot, and what they call, what Peter Dale Scott calls the phase one cover story before it had to change, was Oswald Soviets Castro, right? And then he died. And all of this bullshit propaganda that had been flying around tying Oswald to Castro and the Soviets suddenly went dark. I think that when Oswald got popped, that gave the powers that be, Lyndon Johnson, J. Edgar Hoover especially, the Dallas police, eventually Dulles and the Warren Commission. When he died, it was almost like the ref called a timeout. Okay, now, what the hell are we going to do? If all of this stuff flying around, he's not there to defend himself. He's not there to contradict it either way. The guy's dead. You could paint him any way you want. But going along with the Oswald was a Soviet Castro agent is going to cause World War III, right? The alternative to that is fessing up and telling the truth. Look, this guy was a low-level asset of the United States government who was framed by these guys. Well, you can't do that because of who Oswald was, see, of what he was, because there's a paper trail leading him back to the CIA. They can't tell the truth about him. They can't tell who he really is. So they make him a lone nut, cover everything up. I think the cover up started the minute he died. Don't you agree? Would you agree that gave them a breath to figure out the next step? How do we cover this up now?
Yeah. I mean, you got to figure that defection has intelligence written all over it.
Yeah,
whether it was 100%. CIA or naval intelligence, it was something other than just Oswald deciding, "Hey, I've had it with America, and I'm moving to the USSR." I mean, that's just the percentage of the population at that time that would do that is beyond minuscule. So
negligible,
you know, to the point where it made headlines when people would defect to the USSR. It was no secret that Oswald had defected to the USSR. You know, everybody that lived in Texas read about it in their paper. Hey, this local guy just defected to the USSR. You know, this former Marine. Everybody in Texas knew it.
Yeah. Louisiana too. New Orleans native. Yeah.
So it was no secret that Oswald had went to live in Russia, and now he's back with a Russian wife, can't keep a job because the FBI's steadily checking up on him, probably visiting the places that he's working and, you know, opening his mail, reading his mail, staying on top of it. Cause, and not just watching him, watching Marina, you know, chances of her being a spy are higher than Oswald being a double a double spy. So,
and they're not, they weren't the only ones watching every move the guy made. You know, look at John Newman's research, Malcolm Blunt's research. Read Alan Dale's book, The Devil is in the Details. What we know now is that even when Oswald, when his, the second he landed in Moscow, right? There's a normal highway, right? It's called Office of Logistics Management within the CIA. Anyway, obviously, like Robbie, if you defected to I don't know, Afghanistan or something, you know, there's, the information is going to start coming in on you, right? And when the information comes in, there are certain preset pathways for that information to come in, like Soviet Russia desk, Office of Security, CIG, right? A guy defects to Russia. This information comes in. Well, somehow, just the Oswald information, this particular defector, somebody diverted it, right? And it went to James Angleton. Other desks within the CIA were not getting the information that they normally would have gotten for a defector. Somebody, for lack of a better term, pre-programmed the system to divert this Oswald information. And what we know now is that this went on through this guy's whole life, that that particular desk within that particular compartment within that other compartment of the CIA were keeping a very, very close tab on Oswald. And they were very particular about who they shared the information with and when, beginning even prior to his defection. I do believe he was an asset in some way of the government.
And anybody paying attention, you know, not just to the defection, but going up to what the hell he was doing the summer of 63 in New Orleans, this guy's all over the radio, the news, you know, on being interviewed on, you know, on camera.
That's a setup though, right?
Is it? Anybody paying attention can see, all right, well, this guy here is talking about, you know, hey, we supporting Castro, Marxism, communism, da-da-da. Well, let me check into this guy a little bit more. Wait a minute. He defected to Russia? He's got a Russian wife?
And wait a minute. They let him back in?
Yeah.
They loaned him the money to come back?
So now, anybody paying attention in New Orleans and Texas could see that this guy would make the perfect patsy. Anybody that knew that, okay, this defection had to be an intelligence operation tied to the CIA, no doubt about it, or it could be. And anybody paying attention to what was going on in New Orleans, okay, is this guy for real? Even if he's not for real, hey, he's putting it out there that he's supporting Castro. And that's what they see. This guy made the perfect patsy, the perfect one. If you were going to dump an assassination attempt on the president on anybody alive at that time, Lee Harvey Oswald was the perfect choice.
There's another reason he was a perfect choice, Rob. If somebody within this milieu, like in New Orleans, Dallas, Miami, if they knew he was a low-level asset, right? If Harvey or Morales had the information.
Yeah, any right? operational knowledge, yeah.
Yeah, look, there's a point that Peter Dale Scott makes in an appendix to Alan Dale's book, The Devil is in the Details. You know, Alan's book with Malcolm Blunt. There's an appendix 8, I believe, where they're discussing different ways of looking at Oswald as an asset, right? And he makes the point of, was it Carlos Quiroga that Oswald went to his house and knocked on the door?
Yes, Carlos Quiroga.
Yes.
Yep.
Carlos Quiroga was one of the CIA-sponsored, kept, financed, and run Cuban exiles, right? Right. He says, so what you initially, he said, this makes no sense. If Oswald was CIA, you essentially there have the CIA trying to infiltrate itself. Why are you having one CIA operative or asset try to lie to and infiltrate the other CIA asset by presenting yourself as the opposite of the pro-Castro cover that we assigned you? It makes no sense. It makes no sense whatsoever. But if they know this guy, Oswald, is a low-level dangle, ultimately being run by Angleton's shop, and somehow what he's doing in New Orleans is cross-pollinating with other anti-Castro operations, it's not going to take long for them to get word of this guy and realize for that reason and for the reasons. See, that's the thing. They've given him this pro-Castro cover, right? If the plotters know this is a cover, hey, you know what? That guy's full of shit, right? If they know this, well, when they leave him holding the bag as the patsy, they're also leaving him with the bullshit pro-Castro cover that the CIA assigned him hanging around his neck. And you're dropping him and that and in the FBI's lap at the same time, forcing a cover-up, you know?
Do you think it's possible that, like, I don't know how much of the interviews with Oswald you've seen. Obviously, there's the I'm just a patsy video, but even when he's answering questions later, or if it's before, he answers a couple of things, like, I forgot the word for it. I'm not going to be able to say it. I emphatically deny these charges. There we go. That's the word. Do you think that in his mind, he knew that if he just stays quiet, someone's going to get him out of this situation, someone that might be higher up or might be more involved or connected?
I don't know. Rob, to me,
he had plenty of time to shout at anybody, and just even when they're pulling him away, to scream at them and tell them this is all a setup, this is all a lie, or expose anything. But he kept his silence. So that's
something I do believe.
Okay.
I do believe that the split second that man heard they just shot the president outside, or somebody shot the president outside, it was like a bomb going off for him. The light bulb went off immediately, and he knew he didn't do it. But in that moment, he knew damn well exactly who did. And he also knew, oh, shit.
And he was fucked.
And he knew he was fucked. God damn it, they did it.
That's why he went back to the rooming house and got his pistol.
Yep.
And probably went to meet his contact of in some form or fashion to figure out what the hell is going on. He thought he was going to meet somebody he could trust.
And if he didn't think the cavalry was riding in, he would have spilled his guts. He wouldn't have acted like he did in his interrogations. Had he known that they were going to leave him hanging out to dry, he probably would have led him right to the perpetrators. But holding out that, okay, they're not going to leave me in this. They're going to get me out of this. I just need to be cool. Help's coming. You got to give Ruby a chance to pop it.
That's what I think. Just because, I mean, yeah, he didn't really say a whole lot in the interrogation. And I know they say they didn't have anything recorded, but Hostie took notes. And you just have this aspect of things where it's just like, I mean, I don't think he knew he was going to be held out to dry. And I think they saw it as like a more financial decision, which was like, I mean, if we let him take the cover up, then we don't have to worry about exposing that there might be a rogue actor in the CIA who might have orchestrated a plot or did something of this sort to do so.
Well, if you notice too, while Oswald's in custody, and it happens very quickly, I think there was an initial interrogation with Fritz, even though we don't have a record of it. But from that point on, you better believe somebody from the FBI is in on every interrogation, you know, to kind of control the narrative. Because I believe that Hostie was keeping an eye on these guys. But I also think that when he was in New Orleans, Oswald was feeding information to the FBI, or, you know, while he's doing quote undercover work against these anti-Castro Cubans in New Orleans. And, you know, we have the testimony of Orestes Pena, who claims that he saw Oswald with FBI agent Warren DeBreeze. We have William Walter, who's stating that he saw the Oswald file in the New Orleans office of the FBI. We have Oswald when he's arrested in New Orleans. What's he do? He asked to talk to somebody from the FBI. They send Quigley in there to talk to him. You know, they took it so seriously that they you know, this guy Milton Koch, he wrote this big report, 20 or 30 page report in October of 1963, before the assassination on this guy.
Who, Rob? Who?
Milton Koch.
Okay.
That's K-H-A-C-K for those wondering. And then who shows up in Dallas the evening of the assassination? Warren DeBreeze, a New Orleans FBI agent. So why in the hell, out of all of the FBI agents that they have in Texas and Dallas already, why do they bring Warren DeBreeze from New Orleans to Dallas?
He's got to read Dallas in on a few things.
Just saying that there's got to be a reason. And, you know, when you start putting all these little puzzle pieces together and saying, okay, all right, well, that makes sense. If this, well, that makes sense. If that, you know, you get to see the bigger picture, because they didn't want Oswald opening his mouth to the Dallas police saying, look, well, I'm informing to the FBI about all this shit that's going on in New Orleans, and you all breathing down my ass over here in Dallas, you know, get off my ass. We're all on the same side here. Quit bothering my wife. Quit stopping by my work. You know, he just about had it with all this shit by the time, you know, Dallas, November 63 rolls around.
I will never get over the complexity of this case. Yeah. There's way too much. Like, you guys are very knowledgeable. I appreciate that. You guys
too definitely much know information, dude. Wow.
Well, it's
wow.
Like
too much information.
Putting a puzzle together. I'm like, yeah, puzzle. Each after each piece, you just take a break and don't come back to it for 10 years. Like, it's just, it's difficult because, I mean, there's a lot of angles, obviously, and I've tried my best. I think the only area I really am still trying to explore is the Harvey angle, more of like connections with the mafia as well too. I know there's some people that have written books about the Johnson tie-in. I always just think Johnson's a part avoid of the cover-up, but I mean, I gotta hear this all out. Like, I don't believe in the acoustical evidence, but it's something I had to learn about just because I want to learn everything that was going on around this case, everything that kind of followed into it. I mean, you can't just ignore, like, people ignore the Marilyn Monroe stuff and all that. I'm like, I consider it to make the picture complete, whether it's valid or not. I'm like, I just like to know about it because, I mean, it puts in a bigger picture of historical reasons for what happened in 63. I mean, I don't think it was involved in the assassination thing, but also I had to figure out what the hell communism was and realizing that there's multiple variations of communism. So, you know, I think that's all important stuff, especially for new researchers like myself. I mean, you guys are definitely deeper into it than I am. But I mean, it is definitely something where it's like, do you ever expect there to be a full answer on it? Do you think it's going to come close? I always hear people saying that it's going to leak out at some point.
Boy, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't think so. I think we'll probably still be doing quick hits, God willing, 20 years from now, when we're old and feeble and hobbling around on our walkers.
Slobbering on our microphones,
still talking about, you know, new documents just got released this week, Doug. Let's talk about this
now from our sponsor, really powerful boner pills,
Geritol.
We'll be right back.
But Doug and Rob, I seriously appreciate the time you've given me.
It's just me this week. Rob's gout has a flared up on him.
Is there a place where people can find your guys' links, Doug, if you want to go first, Rob, if you want to end?
The internet. No, I'm just kidding. Look, I tell you what, if you just Google Drop D Podcast Productions, Drop D Podcast Productions, or just Google The Dallas Action, Doug Campbell. It'll come up. I'm everywhere from Amazon Prime to Spotify, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, Podbean, just anywhere you find good bullshit-free Historic Research Podcasts.
I heard you mention that the last episode you released.
Yeah, man. We don't. What are we, Rob? What are we?
Serious researchers, Doug.
What do we do?
We tell the truth.
What do we not do?
We don't speculate.
And we don't make shit up.
That's right.
That's right. It's our mantra. It's a new thing we do now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rob, where can people find you?
Everywhere. Everywhere you listen to podcasts, even on YouTube, Spotify, Amazon, iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Burberry. I mean, you name it. I'm probably on some weird African app in Zimbabwe. I have listeners all over the world. So just Google the Lone Gunman podcast. Follow me at the Lone Gunman 7 on Twitter. And you'll be notified whenever an episode drops, and feel free to subscribe to the show if you like what you heard here, and Quick Hits as well.
You can even find Rob on Analog Reel to Reel at your local Woolworth.
Reel to Reel. Wow. I'm going to link all your guys' links in the description. Seriously, I appreciate you guys for doing the show. Doug, it's a pleasure to meet you, man. And I appreciate
what welcome you guys to the community. Tread carefully, sir.
I'm not posting welcome on any forums anymore. It's over with. That's over with. Like I said, I'm new to it, and I'm not a researcher. I'm just someone that's trying to figure out what the hell, because this is a topic. And I think when anybody gets interested into it, it's why I've been pushing people just to look into it for themselves, decide if it's CT or you're a lone nut. I don't care. Just get interested into it, because it's history, and it's something that is still kind of like, what's the answer or what's this if you don't believe the official story? And it's a fascinating subject. I'm glad there's people like you that are doing, you know, deep research on it and able to correct me if I make a mistake.
Dude, I do good to correct myself. Just listen to our last episode. I'm not going to correct you, I promise.
Yeah, welcome to the club. It's kind of like the CIA. You know, once you're in for life. So, yeah.
Yeah, we've taken a liking to you. We're not going to leave you alone now.
All right. Well, that's good. I feel comfort in that. But I'm going to link your links in the description, guys. It's been a pleasure chatting, and thanks for listening to this episode Out of the Blank.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.